To remind all participants, this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's CEBNR call on Tuesday, the 23rd of February. We have Alan Greenberg, Michaela Nalon, Siva Mutasami, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Mike O'Connor, Ron Wickersham, Michael Pelage, Jeff Eckhouse, Barry Cobb, Ted Suzuki, Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Marty Milam and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies from James Bladel, Marika Konings, and Elaine Doolan. Also, please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Gisela. By the way, just for once, I'd like to see, when after they make the announcement that if anyone doesn't like it being recorded, they can drop off, that everyone drop off the call.
Let's do that on the last one, shall we?
Okay. Mikey, are you here?
I am here.
Would you like to take off where you left off before? If you remember
where
that is.
Yeah, I can remember.
Well, we can start it over again if you'd like.
Oh, God. I don't think anybody would want to go through that again. I think I was on page 8. But I don't exactly remember where. And
I actually would like to go back to 7, if you don't mind, and talk about the disruption of email one.
Yeah, we had a discussion about that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well,
fire away.
That's one where we were, at least to begin with, at exactly opposite sides. I view email as one of the many possible services one can get out of a domain name, and I would want to see it stop working as the last ditch or one of the last ditch opportunities to tell the registrant that there's a problem.
Yeah.
So
I think even if
it was pardon me.
I think I'm on the same page.
Okay.
Michaela kind of blew me out of the saddle on that one last time, so I think I.
I mean, part of me says it would be really nice to do things like hold all email until the domain is renewed or something like that, but I can't for the life of me really figure out a way to do that. So,
no, I think that Michaela pointed out that it depends so much on where the email is hosted. The only thing that a registrar has any control over is whether or not the MX records resolve. And so I guess before I plunge the rest of the way through this list, I wanted to sort of stop, take a checkpoint, and see whether where we should go from here. I mean, I think that the purpose of this particular document has been served, which is to trigger a lively debate. But I'm not sure that this document is all that good. And, you know, what I was doing when I was writing these last three pages was just sort of sketching notes. But in terms of actually advancing the ball on the working group, I'm not sure what we get from a discussion about this. So I thought before we dove back in, I'd just sort of take the temperature of the group and see what we wanted to get out of the discussion so that we didn't waste people's time unnecessarily. I mean, I'm happy to go through and continue sort of explaining the little cryptic notes, but they are riddled with errors, and not just one guy's opinion, and et cetera, lots of disclaimers. And so if people want to do that, that's fine. But if you would rather do something else, I certainly wouldn't want to stand in the way of the group on that. Does anybody have a strong opinion? This is purely process, not content at this point. Keeping my eye on the little list.
I have one, but I guess I'd like to hear from anyone else before I chime in. All right. right in the absence of anyone else. I find some of these discussions useful because bringing up concrete examples so that we all understand them and understand the pros and the cons, I think is does not give us lead us directly to the final answer, but I think contributes to a leveling the field, and we all understand some of these issues better. So I wouldn't mind going through them, but
okay. Well, I'm happy to do it. We all have so much to do that I don't want to waste people's time. Let's churn on ahead to page 8, and if at some point your patience runs out, just stick your hand up and say, "Mikey, this is ridiculous. Let's do something else." So, I think I talked about the registrar slamming stuff. That was really an allusion back to a pretty extensive discussion that we've had in RAP, Registration Abuse Policies. I think we've got some language in the report that's out on that. It's kind of magical thinking, but it would be a great way to sort of reduce the confusion, especially leading up to expiry, that some registrants face. And so I think it would be neat to do. I don't exactly know how. We talked a bit about sort of amping up the compliance activity around this, perhaps taking a look at pursuing. At the heart of most of the slamming scheme, there seems to be a connection somewhere to a registrar, although some of the schemes are very complicated, and a registrar is by no means the only player. But anyway, that's sort of what that's talking about. It's why it's in the harder stuff column. The next one is the issue of how inconsistent Whois data is in the way it's displayed. Right now there's quite a bit of dispersion between registrars and registries, for that matter, in terms of how the data elements are arranged on the page, headers, etc. And I think Michele may have mentioned this in the last call, that there is I think he shared an experience where someone gave him a template to use. And it could be that that's all we need to do is make a template more readily available, more public, more emphatically presented, and more strongly encouraged for registrars to use. I just don't know, but I was thinking that in many of these cases, it would simply be helpful to be able to count on finding the data in the same sort of format, no matter where one was looking at it.
Well, it's not only it's not only in the same format, but as an example drawn from earlier discussions, some registrars list a reseller in Whois. Other ones simply have a code number, and perhaps a process by which one could find one, if you know all the secret incantations. And that's not a big thing until you're trying to find out who you're supposed to be dealing with.
Right. And again, a lot of this is done under a fair amount of time pressure, and anything that we can do to help people when they're
Michele?
Sorry, I had myself on mute. Just this thing about how registrars handle resellers. I mean, I think it was Alan said, yes, some people do list the reseller in the Whois somewhere. A lot of the ones who don't, if they make it very easy for the registrant to discover who the reseller is on their website. You just put in the domain name in some cases, and will bring back the contact details for the reseller. I mean, this entire thing about the timelines and everything else, I mean, don't mean to be blunt, but this entire thing about, you know, timelines being short, I mean, if the domain has expired, under normal circumstances, you've been given plenty of opportunities. If the registrar of record provides a facility whereby you are able to contact the correct reseller, I don't see what the issue is. If the registrar is a total and utter scumbag, then that's really going to be a problem for compliance in other areas anyway.
This is Mikey again. I think that this is where we get into sort of an interesting part of the conversation. You know, there is sort of an emerging theme in these conversations that there are registrars that exemplify all that's good about our industry, and there are others that don't. And the transition between the two is tricky and gray sometimes. And I think that what would be useful is some signposts for everybody to figure out that situation. The difficulty with punting everything to compliance, as we heard on the IRTP call this morning, is that they're not really geared up from several vantage points sometimes to handle that. Sometimes they don't have the policy underpinnings to do anything because, you know, so they can't really enforce because there's nothing to enforce. The other is that they're not really staffed to handle that kind of thing. And so I think at this point in the conversation, we're sort of, in a way, at the nub of it. How do we handle the situations that are in the gray area? The stalwart registrars, for the most part, don't present these sort of problems. The scumbags, I like that term, I'll go with yours, also don't present as many dilemmas, but there's a huge variation in the middle that it seems to me would benefit from some guidance. And I'm not necessarily saying that the guidance has to be the iron fist of policy. In fact, James makes a pretty good case, he made it again this morning, that by embodying a lot of this stuff in policy, we tie the hands of those who want to innovate to get stuff done. But at the same time, I think it's these kinds of minimum standards and signposts that if we can figure out a vehicle to agree on them, we advance the ball for everybody. A long-winded response, McKeely, but that's sort of the way I feel about it. And, you know, there's a lot of this consistent minimum stuff on this page where I really don't want to ram uniformity down people's throats. And again, this is just Mikey ranting in PowerPoint. Gotta lay that disclaimer in there again. But at the same time, you know, our industry's maturing a bit, and I think it's time for us to sort of take another step forward to providing consistency and sort of minimum standards of behavior and operation here where we can to help the customers of registrars and the registrants and the registries move into sort of the next era in the mess. So next one was the same sort of thing. One of the things that I sort of highlighted in the goofy flowchart was the fact that it's awfully hard, especially for an extremely occasional user, which is the typical registrant, to figure out the status of their name. partly because of the way the information is displayed or not, and partly because of the nomenclature, the names that we use for the statuses. I think, again, the conversation we had this morning where I stepped on my tie and said, oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a registrar hold status. There is no such thing. It's like, oh, God, I felt so dumb when I said that. But anyway, you know, it's I think, very difficult for a person who interacts with this process. Probably the most frequently they interact with it once a year when they renew, or less, because a lot of folks, myself included, renew for, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 years, depending on the name. And, you know, there's the old system design parameter that says that the occasional user is the most difficult user to design for, because you basically have to re-educate them on how a process works each time they confront the process. And today, figuring out the status of your domain from who is very challenging, I think, for a lot of people. So that's where that notion of status comes in.
Mikey, I'm reminded of years ago someone was describing a specific programming language, and you know, various people have said it's very, very, very difficult to use, and the person disagreed with them and said it's exceedingly easy to use. It's almost impossible to learn.
and we're
in the situation here where the less frequently you use it, the harder, the worse off you are in trying to get back up the experience curve and learn it if you ever were there.
Yeah.
And I think that's the situation we're in. It's an exceedingly hard process to learn. If you do it every day, it's not hard at all.
Yeah. I think that's right. So anyway, that's what the status thing was sort of aiming at. The next one was really, again, kind of tongue-in-cheek. A lot of this is tongue-in-cheek, people. You have to understand that I did this partly as a joke. But, you know, we do have all these terms, automatic renewal versus auto-renew grace period versus redemption grace period, et cetera, that are really similar. And then on top of that, we do have a fair amount of variability as to where it's displayed, whether it's displayed, what kind of language is in it. Some people have very clear language. Some have hard-to-understand language. And again, this is our occasional user who is stumbling around pretty much in the dark. Not because of what registrars have done. I don't want to accuse registrars of that. It's just that they don't engage in this very often. So I think that to the extent that we can make those things clearer, and again, we run right into that same discussion about not wanting to stifle innovation, gray area to scumbags. We have to figure out a way, I think, as a community to address that.
Well, Mikey, in this case, do you mean consistent or do you mean minimum?
Well, I think what we run into trouble with minimum and consistent, and we probably need to figure out a different way to tackle this problem. If we say consistent, that could be a code word for uniform. And uniform, I don't think, flies. I think that's dead on arrival. The trouble with minimum, and James and Paul are very articulate on this, is that you then run the risk of triggering a race to the bottom, which, by specifying a minimum, you create a situation that really nobody wants. And so, you know, we're bumping into this enough that we almost need to pick one of these minimum consistency ones and try and figure out a way to solve it in a new way. And I guess that if I were to pick one, I'd pick one that was really low risk and really low impact.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I'm trying to follow exactly what you're talking about, and I'm a little lost.
No. Shocked.
Could you please, it's like...
Well, I'm dancing around tough issues. That's why I'm using so many words. You know, let me use fewer words.
Okay. Look, it's nearly 8 p.m. in my time zone.
You've had a beer or two.
I was in the office shortly after 8 a.m. this morning. Cheryl's been up nonstop for 28 hours. Alan is probably similar.
I've had a nap. I feel
I had 4 hours sleep, so I'm okay.
Yeah. So
go ahead, McKelly. Sorry to interrupt.
If you wouldn't mind, just being a little less ambiguous and being a little bit more concrete about what exactly you're talking about, because I'm more than happy to discuss things with you and to work with you and work with other people, but at the moment I'm rather confused as to what exactly you're talking about, because...
Well, let me give you an example. So in registration abuse policies, we basically broke our pick on the issue of uniformity of contract, which was an issue that came up there. And the reason we broke our pick was this issue of consistent minimums. And we basically fell into the, you know, it divided right along contracted parties on one side, non-contracted parties on the other. And we couldn't figure out a way to bridge that. We couldn't figure out a way to get to consensus between the two sides. Well, in consensus terms, that's just a consensus failure. It's not the end of the world. But at the same time, if we fall into that same pattern with everything that has either the words consistent or minimums embedded in it, we're stuck. And until we figure out a way out of that, there's a lot of stuff that we're going to be stuck about. And that would be too bad. I think that everybody would benefit from a way out of that stuckness. That's really what I'm dancing around. And what I would propose as a way to get unstuck on that is not to take on the most difficult issue as our first try, which we accidentally did in RAP, because, you know, contracts are difficult. So we could take on something like some of the stuff on this page, which is difficult, but not nearly as difficult as contracts. And we could hammer on a relatively low-impact issue, partly to solve the issue, but partly to figure out a way out of this schism between folks who want consistent minimums and folks who don't. Treat it as a pilot project. Treat it as a test case. But, you know, do that with an eye to something that could be applied then more broadly if we can find a satisfactory resolution to. Is that clear for you, McKeon? James has got his hand up. Sorry.
Yeah, let James go, please.
Yeah, just real quickly, this is James speaking, and I don't want to belabor this point too much, Mikey, but, you know, we had a consensus in registration abuse, and it fell apart at the 11th hour, but we did have one there briefly. And I think the key here is, can we achieve some agreement without normalizing or standardizing or commoditizing, whatever word you want to choose, the registrant experience across all registrars.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it gets touchy. You know, we have made investments in products and services, but also safety features and recovery services and all these other things that, frankly, we feel differentiate us from the bad guys. And so when you talk about normalization, you know, it does flip that equation on its head and turn it into a race to the bottom rather than raising, you know, raising all boats. It turns into who can do less for the least. And I wanted to point out too, just another thought is when we talk about throwing things to compliance, I think that compliance. There are some folks within maybe the registrar community that sees compliance reflexively as some kind of a threat. I don't. I think of compliance as a way of preserving those investments that the registrars, especially those that participate in ICANN, have made to go above and beyond in serving their customers. So I think I welcome compliance. And in fact, I would go so far as to say I would love to see ICANN put a moratorium on new policies for a year and just make that investment in enforcing the policies they have.
Yeah. And, you know, I just thought of a new analogy. New analogies are dangerous because they're usually bad. But one possible analogy is that if we were making cars, I certainly would not want to mandate that all cars had all the same features. But I would like to make sure that all cars had brakes sufficient to stop them. And seat belts sufficient to keep the passengers from going through windshields, which wouldn't break, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that where I get in trouble, at least when I think about this, is that a lot of this stuff I don't view as product differentiators. I view them as basic safety features, and that I'd hate to legislate away product differentiation, but at the same time, I'd like to keep the eye on those safety features and figure out a process by which we can do both so that we can still have robust competition in the market, but with some sort of safety net that says this is, you know, and I'm going to use these, and, you know, these are almost becoming loaded words. That's the problem with them, is that, you know, we've used them enough in these debates now that when you say consistent minimum, it's starting to trigger a response, and I hate that. But, you know, something like that, so that we could, and that's why I think a pilot test case around something that isn't quite as explosive as the uniformity of contracts discussion might be a really useful thing for us, is to find the boundaries of that. Because I don't think that we're really in wild disagreement. Camps, you're right, James. We did get close to a consensus, and it did fall apart at the 11th hour, and we really just didn't have enough time to hammer on the consensus to get it back. But that's another thing that these things clearly take, is a lot of time and a lot of conversation.
Mikey?
Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah. James asked, not James, Jeff asked, what's the goal of the conversation? And I think the analogy you gave is not only a good analogy, but is the crux of this discussion. And that is, how do we differentiate between features on the car and the safety features and basic minimums, which, in fact, if you look at legislation in real countries, they do legislate. You know, at one point, seat belts were a feature. Now they're required. And how do we identify in this process what the seat belts are, what the safety issues are in regard to domain expiration? If you go back and look at the words that were used when the RGP was first invented, as it were, and then when EDDP was implemented, the expression that was used is restore the safety net. So indeed it has been, these things have been viewed as safety issues for a long time now. And I think our challenge is to get back to the point of trying to identify which things are in fact sales differentiators, which are features and which are basic safety features, which one can expect. And I don't know how we come to closure on that, but I think that does, that from my point of view, does address what we're trying to look at today and indeed what this whole PDP is looking at.
Hey, Alan, it's Jeff. If I could just... So sure. That's my question is that, okay, so I understand that concept of, you know, what's of your analogy, which it works for the C++, but what is that work? What is that helping us towards, and what is that, what we're trying to do? Because I'm still trying to figure out, I don't think we've made that decision. Is there a problem? Because we're already looking at all these solutions, and I think somebody said this before. I mean, are we at this point where we're looking at solutions in search of this problem? I still think we haven't answered the questions about is there a problem, and we're suddenly jumping ahead to, you know, what should be features, what should be mandatory versus we're still trying to figure out what the issues are. And I don't think unless you're stating, hey, we've answered that question and here are the answers, I don't know why we're jumping to the next phase here.
Well, to some extent, I think the survey, which is going on in parallel with this discussion, is to try to understand what people think there is a problem that we need to address and what people think there isn't a problem. I'm culpable because I suggested to Mikey that it was worth talking about some of these things, because I think talking about them gets us closer to a common ground of what the issues are. Now, you know, I'm not sure everyone's going to agree with that. James, you had your hand up, I thought, but it disappeared.
That was an agreement with Jeff, not a hand raise. Sorry.
Mikey, you still have the podium. Do you want to continue on this or go quickly onto your last slide?
Yeah, let me just whip through to the last slide. That's the one where I threw the grenades. I love
Well, you, yeah, the last point on this one, I don't think you did, but you can skip over it as you wish.
Let's see. The last one on page 8 is... This is where I was drawing that part of the flowchart. Any part of the flowchart that had about 9 million branches, I decided could use a little simplifying, and so I just put this one in. And we've talked about this. This is the one where there's tremendous dispersion, et cetera, et cetera. To Jeff and Paul and James's point, which is in McKaylee's point. I mean, you know, one way to do this is just wrap this up and say, okay, you don't pay, you don't play, and everything post-expiry is buyer beware. And in fact, I could support that. Basically what it is if you, the registrant, don't pay your bill, then poof, it's done. Next day it expires, and none of this fancy schmancy stuff with little auctions and little drops and all that good stuff. It's just out of the zone. And then there can be some sort of mad scramble for everybody to get that name. I think that when you do that, when you take that position, you're basically folding your hands and saying, let there be a train wreck. And I think that you should probably be careful what you wish for your dreams, they may come true.
Mikey, if you could qualify, though, why are you assuming that if the RAE has no rights post-expiration, that the registrar of record doesn't either?
Well,
which currently is not the case. You seem to be linking those together. Which may be pleasing for some people, but is not, in my mind, a foregone conclusion.
I think that the point of all that is that there is a post-expiry period that's in place. There are a whole host of different ways that's handled. And one way to do it is to scrape it clean and start over. And just say, well, that was a mess. Let's try again. And I think if we said that, then the rules should be simple. When the domain expires, it goes out of the zone.
Well, and indeed, one of the 10 registrars we surveyed does exactly that.
Yeah.
James?
That's a pretty extreme position. Go ahead, James.
And I was about to say, I don't necessarily agree with Mikey's position. I think it's kind of on one edge of the extreme. But it does raise some interesting thoughts points here, which is, would we be better served, rather than trying to build a safety net with small enough holes in it that, could catch every possible scenario, kind of like the goalie in the game on Sunday, right, that can stop just about anything coming their way? Or would we be better served, perhaps, if we just eliminated all of those layered periods and exceptions and scenarios and things, and allowed registrars to innovate on and registries as well through the RCEP process to say, here are our advanced name protection services. This is why you should choose us, and put that out in front of and educate the consumer to a larger degree, and say essentially that this is what we are bringing to the table. Because I think that really what we get into here is consumer choice, consumer responsibility, and protecting consumers somewhat from the choices that they've made, but also protecting them from the actions of illicit players in the marketplace. So, thanks.
So, James, just to carry that on, would it make sense to make sure that all of those activities happened pre-expiry? That post-expiry, it was all exactly the same?
I would even like to... I'm not sure I understand it, but I would actually like to see this level of consideration and thought and concern about the post-expiry period entering into the registrant's mind before they even register the name. Okay? So that they're actually... they're not looking at, so that they're thinking about these things. Well, what about transfers? What about abuse? What about post-expiration? Because I think, personally, and I know that I have some colleagues on this call from other registrars, but I think, given the choice, I feel pretty confident that we're going to win our share of customers given that choice.
But isn't that the one of the issues that I mentioned before, that you already know the language? The typical person that we're worried about who has post-expiration problems, when they go to register the name to begin with, don't have any clue that these are even issues they should consider. It's hard to differentiate yourself when you're selling something that no one understands.
Well, why is that, though, Alan? I mean, why would someone buy a piece of real estate without thinking about how it could be sold? Or why would someone, we should be asking, why are these things not being raised at the beginning of the cycle, only when, there's a problem? Is that an outreach and education issue? I don't know. But I'm not content to say that, the registrant is... just coming along and registering names, and anything that happens to them after that is completely, within the realm of what ICANN should be looking to fix.
Manage the queue just a little bit.
Yeah. Right.
And let Michaela in. Actually, let's let Cheryl jump the queue and then Michaela.
Thanks very much for that. I was really just going to bite in and perhaps be a tiny bit repetitious on some of what we said last week. And that is that when you've got situations where there is predictability and it is then a lot easier to educate and influence pre-ARCA decisions and decision around contract. Then it's a more meaningful exercise if indeed some finders come out and it points back to something that's gone through the registrant's mind that says, oh, must remember to do that, even if it is in 10 years' time. And that's not buying into the if other stuff happens like we've had in some of the examples, but it's got to do with an opportunity for a next phase of industry maturation. And I think we need to keep that in our minds as well.
Thanks, Cheryl. McKaylee?
I mean, coming back a bit to what James was saying, I mean, ultimately, registrars are going to market themselves as providing.
Hey, Alan, could you mute?
Pardon me?
Providing better services than their competitors. It's what we do, it's what James's company does, I'm sure the others do too. I mean, you know, that's what we're all going to do. And, you know, the thing is, if somebody insists on registering a domain name with a company that has very strange terms of service, then, you know, there's not much we can do about that. It'd be like, if you want to use that car analogy again, if I insist on buying a car in a back alley from a very grotty garage, then, you know, I can hardly expect it to be as good a quality or to come with the same kind of warranties as if I went to a garage which was located on the high street beside the others. I mean, just my random thoughts on this.
Well, you know, I mean, let me take this thought that James had to another extreme, being an extremist kind of guy. And say that I don't know in other countries, but in the U.S. there are laws about how you can sell cars, and there in real estate there are disclosure laws about the loan that you get when you buy your house. The loan has the interest rate has to be described in a certain way, et cetera, et cetera. And so one way we could do this is we could take James's notion that says we really need a better educated consumer at the time of sale. And the question I would have for you is, you know, I've forgotten, one of you guys that I'm friends with was marketing domains as Valentine's Day presents last week. And what do we do about that? I mean, to a certain extent, somewhere along the line, we've got to face up to this notion that if domains are a big deal, big real estate thing that's incredibly valuable and there's a lot of harm when you lose it. Somewhere in this process, we have to slow things down, either at the beginning or at the end, it seems to me. And I don't know that I care which end, but I think that when we have it fast at the beginning and fast at the end, we get in trouble. Thoughts about that? Barry, you want to go?
Thanks, Maggie. This is Barry. This is Barry speaking on his personal behalf and not on the BC. And with kind of what James was talking about is something that I could possibly support for a couple of reasons. I'm not 100% familiar with the history behind auto renew grace period and redemption grace period and those kinds of things. And as long as we've been involved with this, I've tried to educate myself even further and also providing a hand in and trying to document what this process is. Bottom line is that it's a train wreck of a mess from whether you're educated about it or you're the layman registrant that has no clue. So in many ways, I could support that we get rid of all of this stuff. When the domain expires, when the registrant registers that domain, the education becomes simple. If you do not renew this domain at the date that it expires, you will lose it, period. That's the consistent process that sets the expectation, and there's no ambiguity behind it. Then that allows the registrars and other market participants to be innovative and differentiate themselves. And if they want to offer additional services at a certain fee, that protects the registrant. But I mean, where we're heading right now is, if we held on to any kind of grace period at all, there has to be some sort of consistency there. And right now, it just opens up the door for too many gaps and too many opportunities to game or take advantage of the system. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Let's see, who's next? Somebody's not muted who's really great at breathing into their mic on their phone. So if everybody could mute, that would be great. Ron, you want to go ahead?
Yes, thank you. This is Ron. I've argued in the past and consistently, to use a term on the table, been shot down on the aspect of uniformity. Yet I want to stress a view of uniformity of post expiration, because the registrant has an expectation of uniformity for registration. That if you register a domain, DNS will work. You will be delegated. If you choose to hire someone to manage your DNS, okay, that's part of the education that they have to get to even get started. But when we come to an expiration, it is not always an idiot or an uninformed. It can be over issues that we've had listed, where some employee moves on, they didn't keep the notification name mailed the same. So I don't see a problem in uniformity of what happens when a domain name expires, so long as we keep it really simple so that we know what happens when you register a domain name. It shouldn't be, I would argue strongly that it should not stop and be unrecoverable if it accidentally expires. But uniformity makes it simpler to differentiate. The problem of differentiating these innovative offers is that there's no uniformity to argue against. If there is a uniform policy, then the ultimate customer gets a better education, because you can say, compared to the uniformity, here's what we're offering. So uniformity is not interfering with innovation.
Thanks, Ron. We've got a bit of echo on the line. I think somebody's come off mute just recently. That was exciting. Let me just read the notes a bit, if anybody else has any comments, and then we'll go on to sort of my last page and sort of wrap this up. The last page is page 9. And on this page, I tried to put all the grenades. I mean, I think one grenade is this whole phenomenon that Rob Hall talked about in Seoul, I think, where he basically said, if the domain's any good, it never gets out of the grace period because the registrar keeps it. And somehow there's something in that if we go back to all those other businesses. Maybe real estate agents keep the houses that are good. I don't know. But it somehow there's something wrong with that, just intuitively. And I know people have made millions, sometimes tens, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars doing this. And I know that I'm goring an ox when I say it, but I think we've just got to confront that one head on. That's not one I would pick as our first try, because I think that this is very tough issue. But I put it out there because it's out there. It's out in the broader community. There's a lot of anger about it in lots of quarters, and at some point or another, I think it's going to hurt ICANN if we just snooze through it. So that's my rant. Jeffrey, go ahead and beat that.
I'm not even going to tackle that and just discuss it, because I'm not even sure why that even is germane to this discussion on what happened, on if they're allowed, you know, on that whole revenue and that piece. We're veering off into all these crazy directions and other pieces, and I don't know, maybe I'm just trying to bring us focused and bring us back, because I've been on these calls for we've been on these calls for 5-6 months. I've, you know, looking at the data that the average PDP is less a year and a half. I'm just trying to get us focused, because I really don't understand, we're going through this, how this affects what the discussion is, and, you know, because it's going to bring up a hornet's nest, you're going to bring up a lot of commentary. I'm just trying to see how that affects the whole this discussion that we're having now.
Well, this discussion happens during post-expiry, and since this PDP is about post-expiry, this is
I understand it happens, but how does that affect what we're looking at?
I think that it affects what we are looking at, because it changes the way that registrars operate. This is essentially an operational process review of policy that's in place. And we've been over the ground of how complicated it is.
Right, but again, I'm sorry if I'm just being a pain on this, but I'm still not sure how this affects registrants and their ability, and do they have enough notification? Can they recover their domain name? I'm still going back to that. We need to answer those questions, and we're just going off on these tangents. I'm sorry if I'm, it's just maybe I reached my breaking point today with these calls after 6 months of, the same issue, the same discussions. And I'm not picking on you here. I'm just trying to see, what's our focus? What's our goal on this?
Well, I think our goal is for this little segment, the little Mikey Show segment, the goal is really to just discuss what one guy, Mikey, sees. And the thing that started me was the contention that the process isn't complicated. That was the contention that triggered me to write that silly process flowchart. And so I wrote the flowchart, and as I went through it, one of the huge sources of complexity, to remember, that's the whole point of this thing, is the varying ways that registrars handle the monetizing of domains after they expire, when they're in these convoluted, multi-layered train wreck of a process.
So, the monetization does not affect the complexity. That's what I'm just trying to, get into this, because we're just going off and we're just assuming that these things are connected and that one piece causes, that affects another piece. And I haven't seen anybody, we've gone 2 weeks on looking at, some of these pieces here, and I'm just getting frustrated. I don't know how the monetization, what their a registrar's monetization method, how it affects the ability of the registrar. If there is something, let's just say there's a direct piece, and let's just move on with it. But I'm just trying to figure this out here.
Well, my response to that is, let's say that, and I think I raised people's hackles with this once before, but I'll do it again. you're a registrar. You've got a very, let's say, a medium valuable domain. It's worth, I don't know, $200 to $1,000.
Okay, so I'm just going to stop right there because, one, as a I am a registrar, and how do I know what a valuable name is? You know, to me, I wanted to buy Eckhouse.com. I think it's worth $10,000 to me. I don't know if I have it registered with Network Solutions. How do I know what they think it's worth? That's what I'm saying. These assumptions of, and I go back and I started this even with Rob Hall, like saying, what no valuable domain. Who's to assign what a domain is, and to who? So those assumptions
Let's stay with Rob's discussion. I mean, what Rob was.
No, I just want to go with what you just said about, let's say, a registrar knows that a domain is worth $2,000 to $3,000.
Right.
How does a registrar know?
Well, there's two ways. There's at least two that I can think of right off the bat. There's probably more because I'm not real good at this. But one way a registrar knows is you can go out and throw it up on monetization and do the arithmetic on PPC revenue. And that's what Rob was describing in his flowchart, was that you throw the name up and you watch it for 4 days and you extrapolate how much money it makes. It throws off $200 to $500 a year, it's worth, you know, that times your cost of money. So that's one way to figure out how valuable it is, and it only, you know, theoretically it'll only take you a day or two to figure that out. The other is that there are all sorts of automated ways. The one that comes immediately to mind is Estabot.com, where you can simply go look it up, and Estabot does that same arithmetic based on traffic and search queries and blah, blah, blah. And so now, if I'm a registrar and I've got a pile of names that are falling off the end of the renewal period, even I, Mike, the complete nitwit when it comes to programming, could write a script to automate that so that names that come off registration that are worth more than X are something I'm really interested in, and I keep them because I'm going to make a ton of money. And, in fact, registrars do that. I mean,
but you're saying after the expiration process, correct?
Right after expiration, absolutely.
So
it
goes through. My whole point is being if it goes through an expiration process, then
after it expires.
Right, and then so then you're saying it would have, you know, they would look through there. How does that monetization, how does it affect the original registrant's ability to renew it? To come back after it in the in the auto renew grace period.
Because now the registrar has a conflict of interest.
Right. So
the registrar has the choice of making $200 by keeping the name or $2 if they renew it.
Okay. So my point, this goes back to my original. Do we have any evidence that this has occurred? Like concrete examples, not anecdotal, I've heard or whatever. And this is my whole point is, do we see this as being a problem before we're going through these solutions? And then I'll just rest on that.
Well, the great divide, and I don't want to point fingers at specific registrars on this call, but if you don't think that registrars have built massive portfolios by tasting the names that expire from their customers and keeping the good ones, you're naive.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that. I'm not arguing that point. What I'm saying is, how has it affected a registrant's ability to get back a domain name after expiration? And do we have concrete examples that what you're saying registrars are doing has negatively affected the ability, or do they not have the time? Because we're not this PDP is not in discussion of registrars' business practices, but about registrants and post-expiration.
Well, now we're facing angels on the head of a pin. Because one approach to this, another totally ludicrous extreme approach, kind of like the throw out all post-expiry stuff, would be to stop this PDP and do a whois style data study of this and I guess we could do that, but it would, I think, frustrate an awful lot of people if we did. This goes way back to the sort of middle years of the domainer world.
Right, but that has nothing to do with post-expiration. I'm just trying to get people to focus.
It certainly does. When do you think that happens? It always happens post-expiry.
Now, when people, what you're saying about the name pasting.
Well,
that was initial registration.
No, I'm talking about people getting names on the drop.
Right, so that was, so just to be clear, when a domain's dropped, it's gone all the way through the post-expiration period, it's been deleted, it's gone through RGP, and then it's dropped, so it had 75 days. So let's not confuse it with the issue.
Right, but now
here,
what we've got is a situation where a registrar is the only person who can do all that stuff that you just described, but they can do it before that process has ended. Because they can start tasting the name the moment it expires rather than the moment that it drops off the end of the process.
Right.
They
again,
are the
so
only party that can do that.
I'm not disagreeing with that. What I'm saying is, and sorry, we should end this discussion, is has there been evidence and that this has affected registrants from renewing their domains, and do we see this as an issue that people are not able to renew their domains, it takes it away because of that business practice? We just need to know an answer to that. Not allegations or anecdotal, but do we even know that that happened?
If you don't want allegations and anecdotal, then we have to stop this PDP and go do a study.
And you probably won't get the answer out of that either.
So this is Flage. Can I get in the queue, possibly?
Oh, sorry, I haven't been paying any attention to the queue.
James is
first, McKaylee's next. And then, are you on?
I'm not on Adobe Connect.
Oh, you're not. Okay, Michael. After the other two guys, I've totally mismanaged the queue. James, McKaylee, then Michael, then anybody else. Go, James.
Yeah, Mikey, and you know, I think I'm not gonna go too far on this. I want to challenge the idea that, you know, because Rob Hall, you know, as much as I respect him and like him personally, but because it was included in a presentation, that we're just, you know, going with that. I think Jeff is absolutely right. I don't necessarily take that claim, at face value, and nor do I see it as a basis by which to charge off, you know, and solve a bunch of problems. I think that, you know, there may be some truth to that. I don't know. We'll have to, but we have nothing to go on. And, you know, you mentioned Estabot by name, and I just want to point out that domains, we make a lot of comparisons with real estate, but domain names are really about like art, okay? Their value comes and goes. They're faddish. You talked about PPC, tasting, and things like that, but that can change day to day, week to week, month to month, and you know, based on whoever lost on American Idol that week. I don't think that really is a foundation on which we can inform a fact-based policy process. And I think that I'm trying not to sound frustrated or wear that on my sleeve, but I think that if we hope for whatever comes out of this group, whether it's recommendations, best practices, or if we create a whole, you know, new book of consensus policy, if we have any hope at all of that being effective, we have to know exactly what it is that we're trying to solve. And we have to be able to measure the impact that policy had on the problem. And if we don't know the problem to begin with, I feel like we're just going in circles.
Well, we do have a chicken and egg problem with data. We've discussed this in other working groups. We talked about it in RAP a good bit. And, you know, I'd be fine, you know, punching the whole button on this one and putting together a study to try and get the data.
Mikey, do you have any real belief that we would be able to get data?
Oh, I think we could. I'd have to put my thinking cap on how to structure the study, but I think we could. McKaylee, you go.
Okay. I would pretty much echo what Jeff was saying. I mean, look, we're meant to be talking about a registrant's ability to recover a domain name. Nothing else. I mean, if a registrant's domain name expires, and we as the registrar of record happen to do something in terms of monetizing the domain through parking straight afterwards, well, so be it. But that doesn't, that has no impact on their ability to renew the domain name. I don't see how the two are connected. Also on Mikey's wish list here, I don't really understand this entire thing about the conflict of interest. I don't see it as being a conflict of interest. I mean, there's no reason why a registrar or one of the related businesses cannot be involved in any and all of those activities and still give the registrant the right to renew their domain if they decide to pay for it within a reasonable time frame. If they come back 6 months later to renew a domain name, then it's obviously going to be gone. But that's happened. I've seen that happen. I mean, it's ridiculous. But, you know, you have to draw the line somewhere. And the thing is, again, like Jeff said, I mean, we need concrete examples of these massive conflicts of interest, not just kind of hearsay. This entire working group has been going round and round and round about supposed issues, yet it's failed time and time again to provide concrete examples of these massive issues that supposedly exist. And there's lots of talk about what an average registrant may or may not think, what may or may not happen. And to be perfectly honest, it's got to the stage now where I dread these calls, because we're dealing with a lot of hearsay. We're not dealing with hard facts. To say that there is no way of garnering any facts about what actually happens to registrants, I think is unacceptable, because there is a way that ICANN is capable of collecting complaints and does so. So, I mean, is there a huge number of complaints regarding to renewals? I mean, are there tangible things? I mean, this entire thing is just, at the end of the stage now, is totally exasperating. And I think, to be perfectly honest, I may have to leave this working group if this continues, because I really don't have the time for this.
Well, this may mean that it's my nefarious plot is working, or I don't know. Michael, you go.
Thank you, Mikey. So here's my... Here's my question to the group, and I agree. This we have been going around circles, and I've generally been quiet, which is generally hard for me to do. But here's one thing I look at with expiring domains, the expiring domain name market as a whole, whether people forget about it, etc. VeriSign, when they proposed the waitlist service, obviously had done some analysis into this. If you will, secondary market of names once a name expires. So if anyone has any data, our friends at VeriSign may have that data when they were considering their waitlist service that may be of value, being able to identify accidentally deleted names versus names that were intended to, if you will, slip through and be allocated. So perhaps VeriSign marketing people have some data for us to use in that area. And as far as trying to solve the problem, it does seem like we are going around in circles. And this is not unlike what happened in connection with the domain name tasting, where there were lots of people talking about lots of problems. And guess how the problem was solved? The problem was solved when registries came forward and used the funnel process to put forth a registry service to bring order to an otherwise disorderly marketplace. When Neustar and Afilias brought forth their proposal, it worked. The GNSO saw that it worked and then became a consensus policy binding upon all registries. So while I hear tons of talk about innovation, choice, you know, how registrars can distinguish themselves, how about we recognize the fact that with the new GTLDs, perhaps we allow and encourage new TLDs to offer services to protect registrants, give them the choice that I've heard time and time again, innovation, choice, all this good stuff, right? How about we empower registries to give that choice in a uniform manner within that TLD?
I love it when he talks like that. James, go ahead. Or Alan, you were up there first. You go, and then James.
Okay, a couple of things. We got sidetracked a lot on the whole issue of whether it is appropriate for registrars to make money on expired names. When this whole process started, there were a number of people who fought tooth and nail to try to have the proposed PDP include the issues of, related to should the registrar of record have a preferential position or should everyone go back to state zero. And the decision we made at that point was, as McKaylee said, whether we like the concept of registrars making money off of expired domains or not, it doesn't, as long as it doesn't prohibit the RAE from renewing the domain, it's not really our business. And I really think we need to stick to that particular aspect of it. The issue of do we believe there's a problem that we have to fix? Hopefully the survey will be done in a week. If enough people do it, and maybe it'll go on to other groups, we'll get an idea of whether there is a belief there is a problem. I personally do not believe we are going to get hard numbers no matter what we do. McKaylee asked, are there complaints about renewal? And there's a large number of complaints about renewal. If you add up all the various categories that map to renewal, the numbers are there, but we don't know exactly what the complaints are, and it doesn't appear that we're likely to get any harder numbers from compliance on that. So, in any case, someone else had their hand up, and we should go on to them. We only have 15 minutes left in this meeting. We need to decide if we're having a meeting next week and if we are doing or decide what the current status of Nairobi is before we leave.
This is James. I lowered my hand.
Back to you.
Oh. James took his hand down. He had his hand up. But...
Yep.
Oh. Okay. It's getting close to the end. The very last one is the thick registry. And I'm just engaging in Chinese water torture here. It's come up in tons of other PDPs, and there are lots of cool operational things that would happen with a thick registry. And I just made up the one in the middle. Just as a mechanism. So I kind of feel like I'm done. I certainly have frustrated the registrars enough. Alan, I think I'm going to hand it back to you.
Okay. All right. For the people who are going to Nairobi, people are starting to travel around about the middle of next week. Is there a feeling that we want to have a meeting? My inclination is to say no meeting next week. We won't have the results of the survey back, and at least for some of us, we're going to be chasing our tails trying to get things done. Is there a general agreement on that? Given the frustration that I've heard today, I suspect there'll be general agreement. But is there anyone who objects to canceling the meeting of next week and scheduling the first meeting for the week after Nairobi?
Sounds good to me.
I will take silence to be assent.
Assuming we have the survey results back by then, yes.
The survey is terminating on the 1st of March, I think, which doesn't give people a lot of days. If you haven't done it, please do it. But certainly, even if we extend it a few days, it will be done. We'll have the results by the end of March, by the end of Nairobi meeting. I'm pretty well sure about that. Maybe Margie can give us some insight, but I feel comfortable in committing Marika on that.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Okay. In terms of meeting in Nairobi, we at the last meeting we said let's keep it on the agenda with the understanding that we may well cancel. And my inclination at this point is to simply cancel it unless there are people who feel that there'll be enough of a critical mass there to allow us to do it effectively. Anyone feel strongly that we should keep the meeting on? Will certainly be plenty of opportunity for those of us who are there to talk in the corridors or get together in ad hoc groups. But turning back an hour, which is during a coffee break anyway, I think that my inclination is to cancel it at this point. Objections? Hearing none, I'll assume it's done. We're 10 minutes before the hour, and I think unless there's anything else anyone wants to bring up, we'll call it quits.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks, Mikey.